Okay, welcome to Quorum again for the first time in ages, but probably we had one a couple of weeks ago. I think what we'll just start, there's things that have happened. One is that Chris has given us a first go at his code, which does MPI element assembly. I believe he's yet to add a solver and make it work. So that's good progress. And we have been looking at LibMesh, and Carl has been thinking. And so on Friday, Peter and Carl and I sat down and talked through some of the issues to do with using LibMesh and looking at the Fortran code. And we tried to come up with a proposal for a test problem that we can use to somewhat objectively evaluate these different pieces of code on. So I guess that's what, I guess if you could just summarize what we thought of, Carl, in terms of a test proposal problem.
What I had in mind was a time-dependent heat equation, because it includes the concept of stepping through time and the last heat operation, but probably quite important to reaction diffusion problems. We wanted to keep things as simple as possible so as not to make it too difficult to either write a code to test or adapt to examples to test or something like that. So include some of the features that we're trying to handle. We need to put up some details of how we're going to solve it. And so we picked a fully implicit method for the sort of a backward time stepping to make it easier.
That still requires you to solve.
But the alternative was a forward different thing, I suppose. I can't remember exactly why we chose one or the other, but
you wanted to keep it easier.
I think it was me who wanted it. Well. Well, it's probably implicit easier than a Crank Nicholson, so
Crank doesn't refer much different.
So
the only difference is the diffusion matrix is on both sides. Crank Nicholson versus only on both for implicit.
So you're saying we might as well do a Crank Nicholson and then a more thorough?
Well, I would say easier is explicit. They don't have to worry about solving
matrix.
I think that's the
point.
Right.
At the time I thought this was a good idea, but I can't remember why reasoning.
You wanted to test the distributed solve.
Okay. It sounds good because I think that's what we're going to want to do, a partially implicit solve in the problem that we end up solving. The solver may come down to being a bit of a problem in trying to compare different things. And the solver may not solver's not necessarily what we're testing, because we can probably link in any solver into whatever package we're using.
And the other way is the two problems, one which is a lot like solve.
Yeah, so that would tell us both things. So, just a static class solve and then a forward explicit method to terms of
the thing.
Well, do we have people having feelings either way? We wanted to at least divide up the timing into some sort of assembly. And release parallel to the notification going on, and kind of motion in my head.
There it is, follow every iterative report communication. Versus flip it, it's just, well, if you have a diagonal matrix, there's no communication that's followed.
Would some Reddit flip the sound state with that? So that just uses the old information.
Yeah.
Okay, the other issue I want to point out is we had decided on an RDU solver because I was concerned that if we picked an iterative solver, then comparison is going to depend on tolerance checks, and companies may do tolerance checks slightly differently. But an RDU solver is probably not what we want to end up using in the end. So,
so, so these two things, this one is COM comparable tests across, well, no, you always want to be testing as close as you can what you're going to do.
There are certain things we're hoping to achieve by this. First, we want to know A, B, C, and D. Is that it? Or
part of it is comparing an object oriented approach.
LibBase would be probably the...
Because they do have a parallel example in there.
Yeah, and that uses
the same thing.
Right. And that's what we're going to be doing. But Chris is trying to do this in his own code, so whatever we say, yes, we don't want to make that too hard.
Okay.
That's where the...
So what seems simpler if we didn't explicit?
And so I expect to let him negotiate this with us as well.
Yeah.
That's why I call it a proposal.
Okay.
I don't want him to feel that we've prescribed it and it's up to us.
Right.
So I fear that it's a negotiated piece.
If you don't have an explicit solve, you know, explicit time difference, then you're essentially going to be able to test your element assembly. Also would be after each time step you would do an update. So neighboring processes would pass information to the relevant relevant neighbors. So that would check each time step.
Do you think would that be enough for a first step?
That's like the two key things I think of the parallel full setting is the distributed element assembly requires passing some information around, and then the explicit time step requires updating your neighbor or your ghost information after each time step versus an implicit solving an implicit method. If you use a super LU, then we're not going to be really using super LU for the real problems that we're looking for
doing that. So, what do you think if we just make change of mind with that next question?
And then separately do that a lot more. Implicit solve.
We could do that as well.
You could do a Laplace implicit solve with, say, conscious gradient, which is simple algorithms. And then you could even say, let's have the same matrix, so you have the same discretization, and then maybe it takes thousands of iterations to find the solution. You just compare a certain number of iterations, say for 2,000 iterations, solve with the LibMesh, it requires this much time versus Fortran basically requires this much time. So you have the same amount of work you're doing, but computation, but then you're basically comparing the overhead associated with passing information.
Okay, which of these things is most important to us? Again, that sounds like a lot of work that we're seeing Chris's way.
Are you saying which of either explicit time step or a conjugate radius solve? Gradients are pretty standard in the space solver, but hopefully there's existing implementation that could be hooked in this procedure that's closer to what we're looking to use.
Have you seen anything to crash yet?
No.
So maybe just get a reaction on those two.
Yeah, so currently proposing a fully explicit time stepping, and then for the problem that uses a conduit gradient solver, we're just going to do one solver. We could just as easily make it a time-stepping problem. And the advantage of having many solvers, it might make timing easier to do.
Less dependent on startups.
Except if you separately time the assembly with
time. Right. So the program itself has the timing.
But it might be that sometimes the timing is because it's loading it into memory the first time or whatever, whereas when you run the set subsequent, it's a bit, steps, it's already loaded.
You can run the set and loop that.
Well, that's what the time step is.
That's what the time step was
what I would suggest.
Yeah, but aren't you going to have to update any implicit? It's always going to be updating the matrix anyway.
The matrix will probably stay the same. You can see what we're doing with testing the solve.
Yeah, okay, that's all
right. Okay. So we just go from split to something. Are we going to even do one solve? We decided to go point testing the solve.
No, I think it's.
You think what?
I think it is. To just see that the procedure works all the way through.
Okay.
And the CG method has in it inner products which aren't tested by explicit time steps. It has DAXB, AX plus Y terms in there. And so those are some of the key vector terms. So it's got a wide variety of vector arithmetic communication that's representative of what's in. And then CG is, like I said, the basis for most of the solvent toristic types. And it's similar to PyCG.
And the other way we can drive the time up on it is refine.
Yeah, make it bigger than the problem. Also, I've got one parabolic equation that's got some power and one set of self-contributing. For the time to come, it's nice to have on the analytic solution so that we can just check the layouts with them. So I've double beeping with the analytic solution that was sort of complex and 2D and therefore had sort of all the communication on a 2D mesh. So what I was suggesting was putting the solution to the Sarsfield equation, 2D solution to the Sarsfield equation on top of a 1D time speed solution for one spatial dimension and one time dimension. So I had something like sine of x times the exponential of t plus x squared minus y squared for variation in time and space.
Okay, so do you think we can send this off to Chris for that?
Yeah, I was going to just work out some coefficients in the solution. And then finish
But even you could just see them, the general idea.
And get a speed depth before
we have to tie down the exact numbers. Sounds good. Cool. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, so then the second thing on my agenda is just this list that Carl has been making of scientific modeling software. So there's a reasonably big table of all the projects that we've found or looked at or talked about. Most of them we are actively looking at. I'm hoping to try and run these tests on Sundance, although I'm not necessarily considering it a great test. It kind of, Sundance, to my mind, kind of tries to do some of the things that computer variables is trying to do. It's a more high level, although with how different that is, I'm not sure actually. But it's heavily templated and stuff, which is what scares me. However, I'm going to give it a try on this test. So if I can get time in the next couple of weeks. LibMesh we're looking at. There was a couple of other things that were on that list, Carl, that we kind of looked at the possibilities. And so.
The two other possibilities were LifeSpeed and FreeSumo. LifeSpeed was a package that's been developed in Europe, I think, between Swiss and Italian groups. It's been used to model blood flow, but they intended as a more general package. It didn't obviously have the quick start examples that LibMesh had, so the flow would take more time to look at how to set up a starting problem with that. And FreeSumo was the fact is that it appeared quite featureful. It's on Berlioz, which is sort of like a source board, but it seems that it's developed at one institute and then every so often the changes are committed into the open source environment. I couldn't see any evidence of anyone else contributing to it. So if we're picking a package we're going to use, it seems nice that everyone's already got some community working on it rather than having to use. So I was happy to start looking at LibMesh. Do you have any impressions of LibMesh from
I like it. I looked at it yesterday the day. And went through all the examples and looked through the code and came up with this description of more of a more familiar thing, the way they describe the geometry in terms of starting with a point and going to a node, which is the point that has more information, and then from there, just standard elements, and then mesh elements. They can do a lot of different types of elements, and seems pretty easy to use. I'm quite confident. UT, they've been like leaders recently in computational.
It is the University of Texas Austin Computational Mechanics Group.
It's CFT Lab.
But is that within the computational
mechanics? Not sure. There's an ICS computational engineering.
I'd like to attend the University, which is a very big.
I'm sure it is. I think you've got a big institute, and off that. The link to that institute is a link to a number of labs, and this is one of those labs. So it's a small part of a really big institute.
They tend to be one of the best examples IBM uses for the blue gene.
Yeah.
And I think they're also.
Although they use us.
But they start out with UT.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, they're blue gene. And I think they're also related to grid computing, which is
and they take this in a big plan. But I'm just wondering if we could just write it and kind of write it to the owners and then we'll come out of this group. But I'm sure about it. Well, once we've done, got all the books in already, just get some reassurance.
So I mean, there's two levels here, yeah, kind of a political level. So if we were talking about adopting this seriously, I felt that there were a couple of levels that we had to communicate on. One, which was kind of a political level, is there the agreement that, you know, in principle we're going to adopt this in a, well, I don't know, to them it might not be a very good way, but at least, you know, make it core to our business. Just talk about that. But then, the way to test that is, you know, what do they think about us trying to execute the meat elements, even if that's not the strongest thing they need or we need even going forward, but at least we need compatibility and verifiability, and we need to be able to run the tests we already have, really. And so we'd like to add that, what do they think about it? And by starting that dialogue, we'll learn quite a lot about the openness to other people getting into their code and so on, and what they think about the logistics of that, especially from someone outside the group. So I thought raising some of those issues with them seemed quite useful.
Is there any evidence that multi-grid activity in terms
of the adaptive mesh requirement?
Yeah. That's quite a nice feature to have already there. Just to find a way to estimate. They hook in test feeds for their solvers. And what people have been doing is with test feed hooking in on the NMG solvers, which is a little more expensive and more of a geometric multigrid, but it's, you just need to focus on the problem you have. That's what and several people have hooked in the NMG solver from Livermore. And they've hooked it into test feed.
Is that with the mesh defender?
A lot of people have used the G from the other one, so I don't think that would be a problem.
Okay. Thank you.
They've done a very good job of creating the right types of classes and templates for a variety of linear solvers. All the other ones we looked at. They've got, right now, the ability to use 4 or 5 different graphical output packages. One they use in their examples is GMV, which is from Los Alamos, which is it's free. It's not as nice as ours, but it's, it does 3D graphics.
Free to download the binary as
well. Yeah, I don't think you could probably edit. I mean, I don't think it's OGP or anything like that. And they do use standard mesh formats for meshes and mesh information. I'm not sure if it's XDA is a standard, UMD, I'm not sure. One of those is theirs that they've kind of adapted to. I think right now they read in a mesh on one node, one processor reads the mesh and then distributes it. But the future plan is to read in multiple processors. And obviously large ones.
Okay.
Another thing, another, there's a presentation that the author of the package gave a couple of years ago, and I'll put it on.
So then looking down this list, so on my state of play here, I also wrote, you know, that we did get this code from Chris. There's quite a lot of work in there. Chris seems design is that, and it's a test problem, is that, the elements and the number of nodes in an element, all these sort of things have been hard-coded in this test at the moment. So it's just a matter of that. The only thing that generalized is the basis functions, as far as I can tell, although you still reference them by an array index. So just a number, I guess, could be generalized into any old unique number if you wanted. But anyway, so the basis functions are a separate module, and you access them through functions, and that's all that I think is necessary in terms of object-oriented design. I mean, he's done it with the basis functions. I would think it's just quite useful and helpful to do that with the other objects as well. But it's a tech. Design of the framework going forward. But we keep saying there's this difference between us, but there's actually, if you look at the way he's done basis functions, as far as I can tell, we've got rid of our global arrays, we're not, no longer accessing the definition of the basis function outside of that module. And that's exactly that sort of encapsulation I'm asking. Yeah, it's a different sort of overhead in terms of templating and so on. Depends on the other overhead that can come in is nothing to do with your choice of programming language. It's your program design that determines whether you use heavily templated classes inside your C++ or not, standard C++. To program design thing rather than programming language. Jobs, so joining. So we've got two jobs kind of in the pipeline, one which we've advertised. Two applications when I asked last Monday, and now we're just trying to, presumably we'll get some more before the end of the thing.
Is this sort of public information? Can you say how many applicants?
Let's leave that out of the
list. Yeah,
even if they listen to them. We would particularly like some people with experience in NPI programming. So I don't know how we attract those. I think that's pretty clear in the advert. Hopefully we can get some applicants that have those skills. And the other job, which is sort of Kerry's replacement. Kerry kind of signed on, he understands, for about 6 to 8 weeks, and I think it's been 8 weeks. This week or something. He's kind of keeps saying, "Oh, when's my replacement coming so that I can train them or something?" But
I've talked to Gary. I think everything fine in terms of the current arrangement. It's been quite well. I think the NASML side of those will probably be picked up by Carol. And I haven't had to check with Korea where the head's got to. But the wording of the ad will be finalized.
Okay, so it's being labeled. I was just going to ask about the NATML database, but Jessica asked about it a couple of weeks ago, and that said it was nearly ready.
Yeah. It's been nearly ready for the last 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah. Yep, okay.
Closes the 9th of June, which is about 2 weeks,
2 weeks. 2 weeks,
one. I think if
week
we
Friday. Week Friday. King, yeah.
So it's going to turn the submitting into one of these online digests. And it's one every week. So next week will be a week away would be the day.
I think do submit it as widely as you can, and then we'll simply reopen it. If we don't have a reasonable field, then we'll just extend it. And I don't think the closing, I mean, if we got applications coming in directly from other places after the closing date, then we'd consider them.
Did that factor link to that? This link will disappear?
I'll check with Maria, because what we perhaps should do is, if there's no evidence of open field, we should just ask them to keep it narrow.
Okay, I mean, we have to wait a bit longer. Susanna doesn't, she doesn't want to check until it's closed, but I got her to check.
Yeah.
And I mean, it, you know, like most people, if you don't submit 3 weeks before a job closes, I don't know. I expect to get the most, if people are thinking, you know, most likely to buy in the last week, I would have thought. Although at the same time, you'd expect maybe that some of them might try and make contact with us.
By far, the most effective way of these things is to get the ad out to people we know. Then we could. What they mean is to send it to the office of the group and get them in. We should do this.
The only response Cal and I have had is a reply from Mark Donnelly that came to Cal saying, oh yeah, I used to do distributed object oriented, aspect oriented programming, which we had to look up and see what it was. I went and had a chat to him before he left last week, and what he used to do before he came here was distributed programming for phone and network systems, you know, not computational systems, but they did all of their development on top of Corba and stuff as well, which was quite interesting. Yeah, and see that he went to a whole lot of the Corba setting respect. You all about said he was there when they approved you and you and all of these things. So, a decade ago.
Maybe we're not doing enough for that front end. That would be the mechanism for getting more people.
Yeah, well, I was just interested. I mean, he said that that's why he originally approached this group, was because of the more APIs and Corba and all that sort of technology. He applied for the job that wanted, I don't know, he applied for some other job, and it was only because he had Bluetooth down in his plane somewhere that he got connected down to the first floor.
Okay,
right. So that wasn't what he had come to do.
But on the other hand, you could have taken some of the shit that was
just... Yeah, well, he just took the initiative in the last week. Yeah, that was all. Yeah, I know. Yes.
Did he not know?
Well, I don't know. I think he just, there's no, he just feels that barrier between the different and the support. He's not welcome to talk to us. Even though I know him a bit, you know, just to play something.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seemed like he could have made some relevant.
Yeah, it was pretty.
Okay. Back with a quick question about the test.
Yeah.
What machine are we going to be?
So we'll, I don't think it's sensible to wait for our cluster
right
before we can do this, because that puts us off 8 weeks or so automatically, and then we can start. So I don't really want to do that. So I'm proposing that we use BioEng 22, which is our 2 dual core AMD Optra. That seemed reasonable to me. The biggest thing against it is that it gets used by heavily by all sorts of other things.
So 2 processors?
So it's 2 dual cores.
MP MPRS we put on there now?
I presume so, but I would have to see the paper.
MPRS should be
put
on.
We should put it on.
Yeah.
I thought also that I was trying to think if we wanted to do something across Ethernet as well, you know, let's just do it like that.
Why is that one machine?
Because it runs AIX and it runs Power 5.
It's just easier to build things like 50 and make me explain.
Yeah, otherwise you spend all your time trying to port these things to AIX. The cluster's running Linux, right?
I didn't know that LibMesh didn't run out of the box on AIX.
Yeah, it has.
It says it has AIX support, but it's an external set of compilers. It's pretty old. I guess it stops using
it. I mean, and I'm sure it can be done. And I'm sure we can probably figure it out.
Yeah, I think they'd be willing to help.
I think it's important to us going forward, although as what I was going to say is that if we have our cluster which has to run Linux running Linux, I think it would be attractive to our developers not to have to run IIX as well, the same binary, you know, because then you'll have a single binary that runs on both again, rather than having to maintain two binaries on that HPC, one for the compute and one for the cluster. It'd be better if you had a single binary that can be put on the cluster or the compute, especially if people are running single processor jobs that don't even care. It should go to one or the other and the compute again.
That does mean there's got to be a little work IT on to move the compute partition.
There is some work, but it should be relatively painless to do because you can bring up those partitions with one processor, get it running, and then just shrink the other one down and bring the other one, increase the resources in one and impose the other. So I think it's a reasonably migratable thing. And the first task is to have a development partition that runs Linux on there.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
you bring that up.
I mean, we tried to get them to put Linux on there in the first place, but they kind of said, "Oh,
you're not worried about that." So I was saying it can be done, but let's just go with AIX.
We've done this more, and that does worry me. Yeah, because at least the new machine will have to run, and they want us to put Linux on the HPC for the development of it. So, I mean, they're going to support the creation of those two partitions. Once we have them running a partition like that, hopefully it's just a remirror of the same sort of thing onto another partition.
That's not an issue for anyone currently running on HPC compute.
What's that?
Moving AI into Linux for this.
After rebuilding.
My version of TotalView.
TotalView.
But if you keep...
Now, is it going all to Linux? Is that the problem?
Well, that's what we would suggest.
Because the license is only for AIX.
But we might need another license anyway.
It might be better for us.
Right. I mean, the license is like a year or something.
Yeah.
That's the year of support, and then it continues to work with AIX.
Oh, okay. So we don't have to re-license
it. I think we just need support. Right.
Check
with Sean for sure.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of discussion going around that people are starting to use TotalView now, and now we're talking about whether we need more licenses, or even fortune.
Yeah, I think that would be the only thing to do, switch to Linux.
It changed twice. I think it's
Power 5,
but I think it's 1.9, so which I think is safe or close.
That's
Because the original cluster we had proposals like the sixes, and I think it's a lot smaller, but the new cluster should be the same.
It is a slightly new revision. I can't quite sure. I can't remember what it was, but there was something.
Oh, and apparently it got the lipids. We didn't know anything about it last Monday, and then on Tuesday. Anyway, last Tuesday we heard that it was in the country and it would arrive on Friday, but then it sounds like that's been revised backwards. Yeah.
So that machine was Bowman's 22?
Yeah.
Okay.
But lots of people are using that to run MATLAB and things along.
I'll, you know, try and get it.
You should. It uses that all day.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'll get it.
It's quite a nice computer, it ran fast, like,
a big screen.
It's got a big screen.
You can't send out, if you use your external IP address rather than local host and then try to connect to that, does it go out by the switch, or does the kernel know that it's local and send it to your bootstrap? Because if you just use your own IP address, then two signals go out to the switch and come back into the computer, and would that test the Ethernet?
Oh.
Is it
anyone testing
that
anyway?
No.
It's not going to be.
Yeah, let's not.
No, you
don't. Okay. But it doesn't take a binary. You've got two dual cores. Just, if you ran two processor jobs, would that run the two on one core? And would it act like shared memory? You wouldn't know. Version of Linux has special scheduling to try and put them on different processes, but there is going to be a bit of randomness to that. So it has to run many processes.
And if you ran four, obviously.
Yeah.
But if it, no, if it was,
it's all about it.
Those two dual cores essentially created, in a way, a mixed. Shared distributed.
Yeah.
That's non-uniform. Yeah. So one other thing I was thinking about when I was thinking about the mesh, is there any way in VM or CMGUI to export a mesh in from this traditional format?
No. But if you told me what it was. I don't know
writing it's not too hard. One of the mesh formats used by FlipMesh.
Okay. I doubt that.
Which is, just has a certain number of elements, number of nodes, and then it has the map. The node map for each element. So all the elements. Essentially a different arrangement of the data.
Yeah.
The data's all there.
When it's easy
enough. Yeah, yeah. I just didn't want to go and try and redo stuff.
No, it's not there. I mean, I'd probably be able to put it in the C rather than write a script for it. It's not there.
Maybe it does put in Chen Fury.
Yeah. But I think one of the issues that need to be looked at pretty soon after this test, probably is the issue of interfacing between C and GUI.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I look at making a version of C and GUI that just sat on top of these clients. Send me a format that looks like, especially something that's going to store a grid.
Yeah, I mean, it might be a very easy change from current here. Current export.
Okay. Anything else?